So, Han Duan is a queer Korean-American filmmaker born and raised in L.A. Let's give a shout-out for Andrew and L.A. Okay. His feature film Spa Night premiered at the 2016 Sundance Film Festival in the U.S. Dramatic Competition and won a special jury award for breakthrough performance. Spa Night also won the U.S. Grand Jury Prize at the Outfest. He also recently received the John Cassavetes Award at the Spirit Awards. An is an alum of the Film Independence Project and has promoted diversity in the arts by mentoring youth filmmakers through programs like the Pacific Arts Movement Real Voices and Outfest Outset. He graduated from Brown University and received an MFA in film directing from the California Institute of the Arts, Cal Arts. Let's give Andrew a warm welcome. Thanks, Andrew.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for coming today. What I want to do is I want to talk about kind of queer Asian American identity as seen through my journey as a filmmaker. So it's a very kind of personal narrative. We'll be watching a short film of mine, Dole First Birthday, I'll leave plenty of time to have a discussion and a Q&A to talk about the film and also just my work in queer Asian American identity after. Just to give you a little bit of background on myself, I grew up in Los Angeles. I'm a second generation Korean American. I went to Brown University, where actually I didn't study film. I started off as a bio major, because I was a good Korean boy and was like gonna become a doctor. And then very quickly realized that biology wasn't, what I wanted to do. I saw my classmates who were so motivated to become doctors, and I just didn't have that same drive. And I feel like the last thing the world needs is like a dispassionate doctor. Like, that's dealing with lives just didn't seem like a good thing. I ended up finishing my bio degree, but then also did a second major in English. And I took film classes at Brown, but I didn't major in it because the film courses were very theory heavy, and I was really more interested in the production side. And so when I was about to graduate, my mother, being very like Korean mom about things, was like, you have to go to grad school or have a job immediately after you graduate. So there was like no year of like trying to figure things out or like backpacking through Europe. And so I applied to film school kind of on a whim because I didn't even really know exactly what that process would be like. And film was, you know, the one thing that really still held my curiosity after undergrad. I was a bad filmmaker, and so I wanted to learn how to be better. And so I applied to film school, and I went to CalArts, the California Institute of the Arts, and I was studying in their MFA film directing program. And the first year I was there, it was like a rewiring of my brain because I had been in this academic context for so much of my life, and Brown was such an academic school and education. That the creative challenges of an arts environment, of an arts school, was really fascinating. And so the class that I was most comfortable in at CalArts was actually my film history class because I could write papers. It was the other classes that I really had a challenge with but really enjoyed. I ended up just kind of, you know, messing around, and I made films that I had no personal connection to, but it was a way for me to experiment. So, like, I had made like a short zombie musical, and I had done a short film about like a man coming home from war, and all of these kind of subjects that I didn't have a personal connection to. They were all kind of things that felt like you could make a movie about. And then it wasn't until my second year where someone told me, you know, why don't you just write what you know? And that felt like I had heard it before, but there was something about what I had done the previous year where that finally resonated. And so I started to write a project about a Korean-American family. And that's a film called Andy. It's a short. And the film really opened up for me this idea of kind of what I wanted to do in my film work. And it's screened at Asian American film festivals. It's screened at queer film festivals, despite the fact that the film isn't explicitly queer. But because I'm a gay man, and there's some kind of gender play, the film got screened at a number of queer film festivals. It really opened up my eyes to kind of the Asian American and also the LGBTQ cinema cultures and how much they exist and how robust they are, despite the fact that you might not necessarily see them in the mainstream. And as I was making Andy and going through film school, I was also going through the coming out process. And CalArts was the first space that I was in where I was out from the get-go. So when I had entered Brown, I was closeted at first, and then started coming out to close friends and family, or close friends. And then it wasn't until I went to CalArts where I was like, on the first day, I was like, I'm just going to be really gay, like from day one. I don't want any confusion. But at the same time, I was also living at home with my parents, who didn't know I was gay, and that was really strange for me. It was a really interesting kind of dual life that I was living, where like I'd be very out in, you know, in school, and then I'd come home, have dinner with my parents, and then I would want to go out to West Hollywood, which is like kind of the big gay neighborhood in LA. And my parents would be like, where are you going? And I'd be like, I'm going to Pinkberry. And just be gone for, you know, like 6 hours. And I think that's a really interesting, existence, and it was kind of the first time where I started to feel this tension. You know, I talk about this a lot with my friends, where, you know, 50 years ago, you like didn't really think about like leaving the closet, you know, and then hopefully 50 years from now or even sooner, there won't be such a thing as the closet. But right now, we exist in this time in society where we live different levels of outedness, where in some spaces we're very comfortable, in other spaces we have to hide ourselves, and I find that kind of modulation really exhausting and really unfair. And so I was going through a lot personally as I was making my film work, and then it came time to make a thesis film for CalArts. And I was thinking a lot about this idea of family. And for much of my, you know, coming of age, I had kind of separated my gay identity from my Korean identity. But as I started to think about notions of family, I realized that these two parts of who I am were going to intersect. You know, that if I had a partner and wanted to have a child, I would want this child to have a relationship to my parents, and so therefore, I have to come out to my parents, you know. So this was really on my mind, and I wanted to kind of explore this in a short film. And so in a way that Andy was kind of inspired by my life, Dole First Birthday became like very, very specifically about kind of my fears and thoughts and paranoias about just what is a gay Korean American man's family life look like. And And I realized very quickly that there weren't that many representations of that on screen. And that gave me further motivation to make this movie. I want to go ahead and play the film. It's about 11 minutes long. And then we'll talk more about it after.
Have you ever seen a puppy, a puppy, a puppy? Have you ever seen a puppy driving a red truck?
I'll talk about this in a few ways. So I think, as I mentioned before, in my coming of age, it was very easy for me to kind of separate my gay identity and my Korean American identity, and part of that is because my Korean identity is very wrapped up in notions of family, you know? So like in my daily life in Los Angeles, I would like go to school, or I would be with friends, you know, I would consume American media. And it was only when I went home and like had dinner with my parents, or like talked about my brother, that I felt kind of plugged into my Korean identity. And so what that meant was that my Korean identity was very wrapped up into notions of heteronormativity. If I was Korean living in Korea, it would be different, because my Korean identity could also be informed by, you know, my citizenship, where I live, the place I was born, the culture I consume. But because I'm Korean American, it was really all in the home. And so, because I'm gay, if I can't have a family the way that my dad has a family, or the way that my brother has a family, you know, what's my connection to my Korean identity? And so suddenly my gay identity and my Korean identity feel really at odds, you know, that they can't exist within the same person. And that was a really, like, I got angry at that. Like, I was upset about that kind of conclusion that I had come to. And so this film was just this way of trying to explore that. And I don't think I necessarily have any answers, but it was something that I really wanted to articulate and express. And there's something about it that's also, like, It's not like an issue of representation. So it's not necessarily that I don't see other like gay Korean characters on screen. It feels really organic to just how I was raised and the culture that I live in. You know, some would say that it kind of ends on a sad note with these two men, you know, these partners, like in the shower together. And I had people, including queer people, say, like, well, why are you making a sad gay movie? And for me, it's like, you know, it's not necessarily so much that like society is like persecuting them. Like, there's no one in the film being like, you're gonna go to hell. And it's more this kind of organic understanding that like, oh, like what has come before me isn't necessarily gonna be something that I can perpetuate. And so what's my link to my family? What's my link to my Korean identity? And so, you know, it's a different look at kind of just like what are the difficulties of queer people that aren't coming from the outside but internal. The kind of dirty little secret about the film, which isn't so much a secret, is the fact that so I made the film and cast my family in that party scene, but did not tell them what the film was about. because I was going to then show them the movie and then come out to them, which is like, I'll tell you the story. So I tried to come out to my parents for a long time. Like, I kept trying to find this opportunity, but whenever I sat down, you know, I could never verbalize it. And so this film kind of felt like this way where I wouldn't have to say it. Like, I could just show them this thing that was a film that I would have to, like, I could distract myself with the process of making an art piece, you know? Because there's a lot of effort that goes into filmmaking. And I was kind of pushing myself off the edge of the cliff. So I shot the film, and then I was editing the film at CalArts. There's a screening on graduation day for, you know, the friends and family of the graduates to come to campus and watch the films, the thesis films. And my parents were like, "We're going to invite everyone." And I was like, "Oh no, that's not." And so before graduation, I was like, "I have to show my parents." And so I showed them the film, and I told them, can you just not say anything? Just, like, watch the film until it's over, and then we'll talk. And then I showed them the film, and then the credits started rolling, and my dad was like, "Oh, okay, is that it?" And I realized that they were so in denial that they, like, didn't understand this message that I was trying to send. So I just started crying, and I had to say the words that I didn't want to say, you know, that I didn't feel prepared to say. And so I said, "I'm gay." And we had this long conversation. And what was really interesting about that conversation, was a lot of different things came up. So, like, my dad told me, he's like, "Well, there are no gay Koreans, you know?" And so then it became this kind of, like, American thing. It's because I'm here, you know, that I was raised here. And, you know, my mom blamed herself, and there's a lot of confusion. And we talked through these things. And at the end of it, my dad said something that felt... It felt like a positive sign, even though it was still difficult. And he said that, you know, "We're not going to force you to change, but we want you to be open-minded." And, you know, he meant to women. And for me, in many ways, that's as much as I could ask of them, too. You know, that I can't force them to change their views, but I want them to be open-minded. And so I went back to my room, and then we just kind of continued on our coexistence. And you know, I was very afraid that they were going to kick me out. I had a bag packed, and, you know, but fortunately I didn't have to use it. And they've been really supportive since. You know, it's been a really wonderful journey. But this was something that, you know, when I told my faculty at CalArts, like, "I'm doing this thing," they had warned me. You know, they're like, "Are you sure you want to put out, are you sure you want to deal with something so personal, so current, you know, while trying to make a film, you know, like, how, you're going to lose the craft of it, you know, because you're just going to be so caught up." And I can understand that. At the same time, it felt like it was what I had to do in that moment. And one of my faculty members, a queer woman, she said to me, and it's like, coming out, like, you're trying to make it an event. And it's not. It's a process. And I didn't understand that at the time. But since then, I really believe in it, that, you know, it's a whole relationship. It's a whole discussion, you know, and I've had conversations with my parents since that I feel like have added to their acceptance of me and their understanding of who I am. So as much as I tried to make an event of it, it was just the beginning of something. a few months later, I was submitting the film to film festivals in the way that I did my previous short film. And then I got the call that I got into the Sundance Film Festival, which is one of the biggest film festivals in the U.S. And you know, I told my parents, I called them, and you know, I had to contextualize it for my mom. I was like, it's like harder to get into Sundance than it is Harvard. And she like was like, ooh, she felt good about that. And then the Sundance Film Festival, they asked the short filmmakers to write a short kind of reflection on what it was like to make your film and have it premiere at Sundance. And I wrote about how I came out to my parents. And then they selected it and they published it on the Huffington Post. And then I realized that not only had I come out to my parents with this film, suddenly I'd come out to the world, you know. And that was really fascinating and interesting and great, you know. As I mentioned before, this kind of dilemma of living different levels of outedness, like suddenly the world kind of became more whole for me. And you know, it's like I can't hide from it now. It's like you Google my name and it's like it's just really gay and really Korean. And I think that's great and it's awesome for me. And as I went through the film festival circuit with the film, I really saw the necessity for these things. I was at a screening of the film where the person kind of right in front of me was watching Dole First Birthday, and then when the shower scene came up, he like shielded his eyes and then like, you know, did like a, oh, like, ew, so gross to his friend, and I witnessed the whole thing. And then they left the screening, and so I followed them out, and I was like, "Do you have a problem with two men kissing?" And I was annoyed for many levels, right? That like, you know, one, I was annoyed that because he shielded his eyes, he like didn't see what that moment was. You know, he didn't see the emotional impact of that day on that man. You know, and then for me, it was like, fortunately, I was kind of cemented enough in my own identity that seeing something like that, I'm not affected by it like in a way that I would be ashamed, but I would be affected in that I would be angry and want to call them out on it. But if someone had seen this guy react that way and was still kind of coming to terms with their sexuality, like how, you know, damaging would that be? And so then I was like, okay, I'm going to make lots of gay movies, you know, until people stop reacting this way. And I think it's really important. And you know, through this film festival experience, I really started to see the possibility of a future and a career in my filmmaking. And I started developing a feature film script called Spa Night. And because of my connections with the Sundance Institute through the film festival, I was able to go through the Sundance Screenwriting Lab with Spa Night. And that lab has developed really wonderful projects like Boys Don't Cry, Beasts of the Southern Wild, Fruitvale Station. And so just to be a part of that legacy of American independent film was really cool. And then I went to the Film Independent and Screenwriting and Directing Labs. And then I shot the film in June 2015, and then we got into the Sundance Film Festival and premiered there last January in 2016, which was really cool. And we were in U.S. Dramatic Competition, which was awesome for me because 70% of Spa Night is actually in Korean language. And so the fact that a film that's a majority Korean language can be categorized as a U.S. film was really meaningful to me. And it was just funny, like, Spa Night was probably the only film or the film with the least amount of like star power. One of the other films in competition was Swiss Army Man, that had like Daniel Radcliffe and Paul Dano. And you know, I would tell friends before the festival, it's like we're in competition with Harry Potter, and you know. It was very surreal that we got that kind of platform, but really wonderful and just really motivating in helping me continue my filmmaking and what I want to do. The interesting thing about all of my work is that I'm really obsessed with this idea of family and the American dream. I think there's something really fascinating for second generation immigrants. So the parents moved to the U.S. and then their children. There's this understanding, even very implicitly, that like the success of the second generation, like, justifies the act of immigration, you know? That the whole reason my parents moved here was so that I could succeed. And understanding that is this kind of strange pressure that, you know, people who've grown up and have had families who've lived in the U.S. for generation after generation, it's a pressure that doesn't exist. And so it's a weird pressure. And when you add this idea of queerness, it really kind of puts into jeopardy kind of, well, like, what's the success here? Because in many ways, like, my family, my parents moved here to set roots down. And what happens if, like, there are no more branches? Because as a gay man, I don't have a child. Or, you know, even if I do have a child, if they're not biologically my own, like, what does that mean, too? You know, so it's an interesting idea and context for people to grow up in and to try and figure out. A few months ago, Spawnite screened at the Jeonju International Film Festival in Korea, and I was able to go to the festival. And I realized that it wasn't a one-sided thing, that, you know, so much of the reason why I've made these films and I've wanted them to screen at the best film festivals is because I wanted to make my parents proud. And then I realized that they're not the only ones who sacrifice something in immigrating to the U.S. It's also the family back home. You know, they lost a family member to a different country. And so then it felt even more important that, you know, I succeed, and then it just got really weird. I think in many ways the challenges of queer Asian American people, it's very intersectional. You know, there's so many different identities that you have to deal with, and they affect each other in so many ways. Many of the reviews that we got for Spawnite, my feature film, that weren't as positive, actually came from gay white men who didn't quite understand the intersection. And that was really fascinating to me, because in many ways my gay identity has always had to consider this idea of my parents and my family. And when I think back to when I first kind of came out to myself, I remember, you know, saying to myself, the first people I wanted to come out to were my parents, because I realized how important they were to me. And then also I didn't want them to find out through some other, you know, way. And I think that there's this idea and difficulty in trying to like separate yourself, where it's like, okay, I'm gonna live a gay lifestyle, you know, and then just ignore this other part of me. You know, I think as you get older, there's this desire to just be more complete and be more whole. And so that's a little bit of what I've been trying to do with my film work, with, you know, Spa Night and with Dull First Birthday, is to create something that feels authentically gay and authentically Korean at the same time. And so I think about things like, there's like a gay Asian nightclub in West Hollywood called Game Boy with an I, and there's something about that space where I'm like, oh, it's both gay and Korean, like Asian at the same time, you know. And I think about communities where suddenly, like, if it doesn't exist within the rituals or the traditions, you know, of Korea, it exists within people, that there are other people like me, who have these two identities intersecting at the same time. And so a lot of what I hope to do with my film work is one, create, an object that is both, you know, queer and Asian American at the same time. And then also use the films as a way to bring community together, because the other objects, the other, you know, pieces of evidence that, like, a queer Asian American identity can exist are the other people, and that for me was really exciting. So as I've been screening my films, to meet other queer Asian Americans has been really fulfilling and very special, and a big part of why I want to continue making this kind of work. I'd like to open it up to any questions or thoughts, responses that you guys have, you know, with the film or myself, anything at all. Yeah, back there.
Your mother, or the mother in the film, before eating, prayed. How does this affect her sense of Christianity and belonging to, I assume, either a Methodist or Presbyterian church?
It's interesting. So the Korean American community is very Christian. I think churches served as a community space for Korean immigrants. It was a place to have friends, socialize, even do business, you know.
How does it affect your relationship?
Sure. Yeah, I think my parents, they are Christian, and it's interesting on a personal level. I think my parents are very understanding and very accepting. You know, they even after I, like, fooled them into being in this film, like, my dad is in Spa Night, he's in my feature, and then when we screened at Sundance, my parents, like, drove out to Park City, Utah from Los Angeles with, like, a trunk full of cup ramen and, like, kimchi. They brought kimchi and, like, pears and apples and all this stuff. My dad baked a cheesecake that said Spa Night on it. You know, it's very funny. And so they're very accepting. I do think that there is still a level of concern. And I actually think it has more to do with the Korean community as opposed to, like, a Christian community. Although those two things can kind of, you know, be seen together. So I have to say, just on a personal level, I think it's not an issue.
Do you go to church?
I don't. No. Yeah. But yeah, you know, I have to say that for me, I never wanted to show religion as the bad guy, you know, because I know of many queer Korean people who are spiritual and religious. And for me, my film work, both in Dole First Birthday and Spana, it was less about, again, having in this outside pressure tell you that what you're doing is wrong. And it was more about, like, well, what's the internal conflict going on? And so that's what I wanted to focus on. But I did want to show it in the films because it's such a big part of my Korean-American experience. I grew up in the church, and I felt like it's just a part of this specific Korean-American culture. Yeah.
I'm just curious about the negative comments that you received from non-Asian queer people, just in terms of why it was negative, because they could not relate to Asian queer context, or...
Specifically in Spana, a lot of those particular reviews were this kind of not understanding how these two different storylines in the film kind of intersected. So how the kind of gay storyline and then the family storyline, how they met. And it might be because I didn't fully articulate them, because in my head they coexist really intimately. But that was an interesting thing just about, I mean, it's an interesting question about film in general, is that you're showing your film to so many different types of audiences who bring in a different, amount of information into those communities or cultures. There are going to be things in Dole First Birthday and in Spana where, you know, it might make sense to a Korean American audience, but it might not make sense to another person, and you just kind of have to go with it, you know. I didn't want to explain Koreanness to anybody in my film. I just wanted to show it, you know. And even if you don't totally get all the nuances, you could at least appreciate the fact that it was coming from a place of authenticity and a place of expression. Yes?
It was interesting culturally. Is that a big thing in Korean culture, the first birthday?
Yeah, so the Doljanchi is a very, it's a big... celebration. And I know it's not fully like explained in the film, but kind of whatever the child picks in front of them becomes their future. And so, my nephew just had his first birthday party, back in February, and he picked the golf ball, which means he'll be a golfer. That's kind of a modern thing now. Like the more traditional items would be like a paintbrush and like a piece of yarn, a bowl of rice, money, things like that. But he chose the golf ball, and then he went for the gavel after, so he might be a lawyer, whatever it is. But I was really fascinated about that particular, ritual, because one, it's very much centered around the family. And two, it's this idea of like, who will you become, and trying to figure out, what your life is going to look like. And there's so much hope, actually. You know, there's so much, there's dreams and expectations, you know, because of what you pick. And that's a lot of what, you know, my characters are going through. Yeah. Sure.
Would it be the same for a girl and or a boy?
Yeah. So it's the same ritual.
Same objects.
I have a question related to that scene.
Yeah.
When you asked your dad, what did you pick? And then he said that, it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
Just remember they were dancing, you were happy. What does that mean?
Yeah, so I mean that's actually kind of inspired by real life. When I asked my parents what I picked, they didn't remember. And that's the other interesting thing about ritual, is that as much significance as it has, it's also kind of arbitrary. Like, it didn't matter what I picked as long as it was my birthday and that I picked something. And so it's this kind of strange frustration that, like, especially as a Korean American, I feel like these rituals must mean something. It's super important. But then you realize that, like, even for my parents, who it should mean more to, that it doesn't... It's not super important. It was a strange realization to have. But I think it's really telling in kind of culture, that these traditions and rituals can change and morph, and that their significance is kind of, it's always a little bit up in the air. Yeah. Yeah.
So you talked a little earlier about critics who said, why don't you make a happy movie?
Oh, sure, yeah.
And I appreciate the nuance and the authenticity and the complexity of not ending up in a happy moment, because it is more complicated. At the same time, storytelling has that ability to be aspirational.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Cinderella, you know, and so many of those stories, it changes the world.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I guess my question is, because you have actually done more than less wonder, right? As a filmmaker, would you be open to doing an aspirational, fairly nuanced, but still with a happy end? Because I wish you'd spot that I had a different ending.
Yeah. Sure.
No, but for the opportunity to change, and for storytelling that is entertaining, but also aspirational and can change the world.
Yeah, you know, for me, it's less a question of, am I open to that, and it's more this idea of there just needing to be more work, right? That, and I'll tell this story about when we were editing my feature film, Spawnite, we had these feedback screenings, and at one of my feedback screenings, I invited a gay Korean-American filmmaker who went to my rival high school and went to Brown University. And I was like, he's going to love this movie. And then after the movie ended, he was like, it was okay. And I realized that his relationship and his experience to his Korean identity, his gay identity, is probably really different from mine. And for me, it's like, you know, if he goes to make his gay Korean-American film and it's like a happy comedy with a, you know, an uplifting ending, I'm like, that's awesome, because it's through the diversity of the cinema culture that we gain our humanity, you know, that we feel like a diverse, rich community and not like a monolithic thing. And so for me, it's like, it doesn't mean that I have to make a gay Korean American film that's happy, but that someone should, you know. And maybe that's me, maybe that's someone else, but there should just be more, you know. But yeah. Yeah.
So actually bouncing off of that, I'm curious, like, what queer Asian American films or filmmakers you're really excited about, and kind of a second question to that, how has your relationship to making these films kind of reinscribed your Korean identity? Like, because you're talking about reconciling, like, family and queerness. So how are you personally trying to process being Korean now, like, in relation to after having made these films?
Yeah, I'll take your second question first. I think, how am I dealing with it? I mean, I'm kind of dealing with it by, like, writing another movie. It's interesting. I think a lot of what I'm looking for in my own life is just a relationship with my family. You know, fascinatingly, my film work, you know, it's brought them into my life. It lets them understand, like, what I'm passionate about and what I want to do. And so for me, in many ways, it's about continuing to make film. It's about, spending time with my family. It's a very personal journey. You know, going to Korea was really fascinating, and in many ways I want to go back to spend time there and just learn more. I realize it's an evolving process. And no one way feels like it's going to work for forever, you know. And then to talk about like queer Asian American filmmakers, I mean, I know that there's a community of us. It's not huge, and that's a little bit sad. But you know, I definitely know of a lot of filmmakers through the film festival circuit. So, you know, I was here for the Asian American International Film Festival in New York last summer, and you know, the filmmakers that I met from the shorts film program there, you know, I was so appreciative and really impressed by their work, and I want them to make feature films, because as much as short films can, you know, can be a calling card, it's like, it's hard to see, you know, short films. It's not the same kind of exposure that a feature film would get, like when it's playing in theaters or Netflix. But yeah, there's definitely a community out there, and I just hope that like more and more people can make bigger, more ambitious work, and that, you know, that the American independent film scene is receptive to that. Yeah, back there.
So, while watching the film, I noticed how, like, the scene with the family, the house is big, they're really populated, and very colorful, and loud, I'd say that. But at the very end, he gets his apartment, a tiny apartment, relatively quiet, and very dark. Was that contrast with intention?
Yeah, it was. I think that's a lot of the conflict that this character is going through, is that that his family life with his partner and his dog, like, doesn't align with the kind of family life that he sees with, you know, his parents and his brother and sister-in-law, and, you know, and you know, that for me, I mean, that comes from like a very personal place, where it's just like, you know, especially after my brother had his baby, and so much of the conversation about the baby is like how much he looks like my brother or my dad, you know, and there's this real sadness that I have that very likely I won't be able to have a biological child with my partner, you know, that there are ways, you know, but there's something about that kind of biology that I do yearn for, you know, and it comes from like a really weird kind of gut reptile brain part of me, but I, you know, it's hard to deny that. And so for me, there was always this, when I was coming out, there was so much conversation about like, oh, it gets better, and I was watching all these like happy, campy gay films, but I had this thought, and I wanted to itch it, you know, was that like, but, you know, sure, it gets better, but it's also always going to be different, and so wanting to like explore that, and then at the same time still feel pride, you know, for being queer, and so like I just realized like it was difficult. But yeah, you know, it's like, I remember with my boyfriend at the time when I was making Dole First Birthday, it's like, he was like, I really want a corgi, you know? And so like, I looked for that corgi, you know, and we got a corgi. But then it's like, oh, is the corgi enough? Like, is the corgi, you know, in a family life, like, is that, you know, it was interesting. It was interesting. Kind of funny story is that, like, the corgi was, like, very well behaved, like, better than the baby, you know? And, like, the thing about the baby, so it's like, of course, because of that party scene, the Dole First Birthday, you know, my family didn't know about this being a gay film, and the baby was crying so much that I was like, oh my god, the baby knows what I'm doing. I was like, this baby knows what's up and is unhappy about it, you know? And I just like after shooting that scene, like I stepped out of the house and just started crying because I just felt, I was like, oh no, like what have I done? But yeah, you know, it's this idea of just like, what do family lives look like, and what is it that someone kind of in my position would want, you know, in their life? And so, you know, I think a lot about kind of these moments of in my childhood that I remember this family being so vibrant and so happy, and that being queer for one reason or another changes that or transforms that. And really the only way of understanding what that's going to look like is by going through it. There's a question up here, yeah.
I related to the film a lot because it was not super happy and upbeat.
Mm-hmm.
I like it, but usually I forget about it after seeing it because I don't relate to it.
Mm-hmm.
My experience was different as Korean queer person. But even though I'm a daughter, but I still felt like, oh, I can kind of understand that pressure and I relate to it
mm-hmm.
very much. And I liked it because it wasn't too, like, happy ending, Disney-like. Like, it wasn't
yeah.
like that. I liked it that way.
Yeah.
But did you have, like, how old were you when you were shooting that? Or, like, what's the age?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember.
I shot the film in 2011, I was 25.
And actually, you know, I've mentioned my brother and my sister-in-law and my baby nephew. Like, it's funny, it's a very personal film, but it was actually kind of, it wasn't an actual experience that I lived through. Like, at the time, my brother wasn't married, but it was this kind of, like, future, like, experience that I had dreamed up, and then it came true. And, at my nephew's first birthday party, like, we took some, like, 가족 사진s, like, family pictures, and, like, as that was happening, like, I started, like, getting emotional, and then I had to be like, it's not about you. You know, it's about the baby. It's fine. It's not the movie. Don't worry. But yeah, you know, it's a personal film. Like Dole First Birthday, it's in terms of its emotions and where the character is at, it's the most personal thing I've made, and probably will be. You know, I don't. It's still like it's still hard for me to watch this, and like the end credits where you see my Doljanchi at the end, and my mom says like, "Oh, I'm so happy to have two sons." Like it's like I still can't quite listen to that. But yeah, you know, it's a thing. It's a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right here.
So when you came out at CalArts. And I guess you first started going out into West Hollywood around that time. How did you approach going into that neighborhood? Because for me, I found it aggressively white,
mm-hmm.
really exclusive. Mm-hmm. And so I always felt more at home in Koreatown than in West Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
So I was really disappointed because I was looking for that community in West Hollywood and I was sort of expecting it, but I was really just shut down. So for you personally, how did you approach going into a neighborhood that always, like, never let you forget that you were not white?
Yeah, you know, actually, I mean, I think part of it was that the first, like, gay club that I went to was Game Boy, which was, like, a gay Korean night, or gay Asian American night, so it was specifically that. The other thing that I was really fortunate to have was a group of friends who were queer and Asian American, and I found that because I had been added to like a Facebook group called Queerians, which I think still exists, you know, and so I think it was about kind of surrounding myself with as much of a community as possible. So even when I went to spaces like that, I felt like there was this like buffer, you know, that you know, it's like I wouldn't go by myself, you know, like it's not something that I would necessarily do, but yeah, the I mean, this is the interesting thing about a lot of gay culture is that it is very male. It's very, you know, it's very gay, and it's also really white. And I, you know, I see promos for like Fire Island, and I'm like, ugh. And so for me, a lot of it has to do with just my personal connections to people and wanting to support. Like, there's a person who wrote on like Twitter, and I'm really stalkerish on Twitter. Like, I search like my name and stuff. And someone was just like, oh, like you, like Andrew Ahn must be so upset that like Moonlight has come out the same year Spawnite has. And I'm like, no, that's great. Like, there should be more of this, you know. And if you want to associate with me with Moonlight, then great. Like, I'm all for that. But you know, I just think that like, you know, I feel like we're reaching a point where this, like, you know, queer people of color is gonna, there are gonna be more narratives, and that it's slowly gonna change kind of even just what physical spaces in our world looks like. Or that's my hope. Yeah. Back there.
Well, first of all, I just wanted to say thank you for coming. Like, it's amazing to see like another Greek Korean like putting out work and like seeing myself in these films. And I guess I just wanted to ask, you talk a lot about how your queer and Korean identities intersect, and I was wondering what role like class played in that. Because I think like in Spotlight that came into play, I was just wondering like how your understanding of your class identity informed the way that you made.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, it's a good question. I think with class, you know, it's like I went to Brown, you know, I had the financial means to like go to this Ivy League college, that there were ways out for me, you know. And not only was there a way out, but there was also a way for me to reflect, you know, and create films like Dole First Birthday or Spawnite. In a way that, like, the main character in Spawnite, who, you know, is, you know, the family struggling financially, like, the way out is harder to find and harder to see. And so it's this blockade to being able to explore a world or explore an identity that's further away. And so for him, he ends up having to explore that in the only space that he has access to, which is the spa. And so I think that, you know, class, it's another factor in kind of how you end up existing in the world, you know, and it intersects with your sexuality, and it intersects with your cultural background. I definitely feel fortunate, you know, and I have the privilege of being able to talk about it. Where, you know, it's like I have friends where they're so reliant on their family financially, or their family is so reliant on them financially, that you know, it's hard to take the risk of coming out. And I think that that's a really it's a really tricky and tragic thing. And so it's just about ways of being able to contribute to the community, and for me, it's through filmmaking. Yeah, back there.
I was wondering, do you think a non-gay Asian could make a good gay film? And I'm thinking of An Lee, which also deals with family, and there's a child that arises out of it, but it's an accidental pregnancy. But it deals with the same issues that you do.
Yeah, the Wedding Banquet is a big inspiration for me. And actually, I remember when my parents, you know, my mom wanted to see the Wedding Banquet. Like, we rented the VHS from Blockbuster, and I was a kid then, so you know, it didn't register with me exactly, but I've always remembered it. This question of authorship is really, it's a hard question, and you see it now where filmmakers, you know, are telling stories that aren't necessarily about the communities they're a part of. And it's a tricky thing. It's a tricky thing. I'll say this. I always think that there's going to be some level of insight or nuance that someone from within the community is always going to be able to capture, you know? And so I think, you know, it shouldn't just be promoting, you know, stories about these communities, but also promoting the makers themselves. And then, you know, if the filmmaker isn't precisely connected to that protagonist or to, you know, to that character, you know, the identities don't align 100%. There has to be some sort of personal connection. Otherwise, it feels like exploitation, right? If it's just because it's cool or because it's like an interest, you know, and there's not an articulatable personal connection or human connection, I think it's really... I think it's dicey territory, and that filmmakers should be, you know, beware of that problem, you know. And for me, it's like, as I've been trying to figure out what to make my next film about, you know, reading stories, you know, and articles and, you know, news items about communities that I'm not a part of, that I would love to tell these stories, I really have to ask myself, like, well, why am I interested in this, and am I the right person to do it? And I've convinced myself not to in a lot of moments. But at the same time, it's like, you know, there are films that I really like that are made by filmmakers who aren't a part of, you know, the community that they're talking about. You know, it's just hopefully in the future more filmmakers get a shot. Yeah, there's a question right there. Yeah.
Yeah. So you kind of keep bringing up like the not a motif because like it's real life, but like a baby.
Mm-hmm.
And as like a mixed, you know, Filipino American who's really estranged from like my identity.
Mm-hmm.
I realized that like family is so intrinsically tied to that identity. There's like no way to like not find that identity through anything else but like family or without family, but like, you know, I don't want to have a child, especially even as like a queer woman.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really have a desire to at least have a biological child, but there's also that pressure of like, you know, like shit, like my family line.
Yeah.
And that like Filipinoness that's been like kind of diluted through like migration and through like,
mm-hmm,
you know, mixed marriage, and like I realized I would be the only one to carry it on in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And I think about, like, my family back in the Philippines that I know and, like, how I want, like, to honor that. And I want to honor, like, my father and my Lola. But, like, you know, it's almost like now is, like, part of my duty to have a child. And, like, you're talking about how you have, like, the success and, like, having a family is almost part of that success. And, like, having somewhat, like, an alternative identity or lifestyle conflicts with that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but you still have this idea of, like, a family somewhat and it's tied to being Korean and passing it down. Like, have you started remedying that at all?
Or? Yeah. No, it's a good question. I think, I think for me, it's still very much in flux, but I will say that like, we live in a society now where like having a child and like, you know, it's not like the only goal or the only way to have a future. But I do think a lot about kind of, well, what's the mark you leave on this earth, you know, and on society and whether it's through your art, your work, your charity, like whatever it is, like I feel like, you know, that there's, there's got to be a meaningfulness to your life, and that can be defined in many different ways now. In a way that, like, for our previous generations, it's been a little bit more like, well, I can always have kids, you know. So I do think about family still, just kind of personally and for myself, but I realize that like traditions and cultures have changed, and that there's other options, and so wanting to also be able to contribute to those options. Yeah.
So when I was watching Spa Night, I was thinking a lot about another film that I had previously seen called The River,
mm-hmm.
By Tsai Ming-Lin, and if I was wondering if that had any influence on your film, firstly, and like contextually, that film also deals with sort of cruising in a spa and Asians sort of like discovering their or like expressing their sexuality in that sort of context. So I was also wondering how you sort of, or why you decided to bring together this notion of like Asian identity with this sort of context of anonymity and like the erasure of identity.
Sure. So for those of you who don't know, my feature that I made, Spa Night, is about this young Korean American man who takes a job at a Korean spa to help his family. And then while he's at the spa, he finds out that it's a popular space for gay men to hook up. And he slowly starts to explore that himself. So I've actually never seen The River, but one of the original inspirations for Spa Night was, Goodbye Dragon Inn. And which is also a Tsai Ming-Liang film. And so the first draft of the Spa Night screenplay actually all took place in the spa in one night. And we kind of, my producers and I joked that that the title should be like, Goodbye Korean Spa, but we didn't do that. And so to talk about cruising, in Spa Night specifically, the spa, because David has a cultural connection to it, you know, as a Korean person, he understands enough how that space works where he has the safety to explore, and there is an anonymity to it, right? That when you're in the space, no one's asking you what your name is or who you are. You can kind of just be and you can exist. And you know, David could have gotten a job at like a gay bathhouse, you know, to do the same thing. But the problem with the gay bathhouse is if you go there and people see you, they know why you're there, right? Because there's a purpose. But with the Korean spa, because the main purpose is actually to spa, is to be there culturally, you know, to clean, to cleanse, you know, to relax, there's this cover that he's afforded, you know. And I think that that's... I mean, there's two things going on. One is that with that cover, you know, you can there's a safety, and then the other thing is that there's now an eroticness, right? There's like that you're doing something that you're not supposed to, and I think both things are at play, you know, in Spa Night a little bit, you know, that there's this idea of like the illicit nature of it. And I realize that that's not super common necessarily anymore, like cruising culture. I think David falls into it, you know, in a way that is, you know, kind of half accidental, and then he kind of sticks with it because he just wants to learn more. Yeah. Question there?
Gay couple, they weren't that affectionate. Like, at times it just seemed like two guys hanging out.
Mm-hmm.
So I wondered, like, was that intentional and why?
Yeah, there's not,
like, until, like, the shower scene.
Yeah.
He took his arm and put it around him.
Like, yeah.
Other than that, like, other times it seemed like they were just two guys.
Yeah. I mean, I think part of that is just my own experience that, like, sometimes, I mean, that's kind of what my relationships feel like, is like, oh, I'm just hanging out with you. But it's also that, like, at the beginning of the film, there's a little bit of tension between them because of this idea of, like, well, like, why don't you invite me? Or, like, you know, why, like, I'm wrapping this dumb present for you. Like, you should bring me along. And so, again, it's this kind of idea of, like, for this main character, like, what does he want, and what are the deficiencies in what he has, you know, whether it's because they're a gay couple or just because of the personalities, you know. But yeah, I definitely wanted there to be this level of, like, you know, the frostiness or just, you know, like, tension between the two of them. So. Any last questions? Well, let me just tell you a little bit more about how you can keep in touch with me. So I am on the social media things. So you can find me on Twitter. And then on Facebook, we have a particular page for Spa Night that we update. And then the film Dolfer's Birthday is available online for you to see. It's on Vimeo if you just search Dolfer's Birthday. So if you have friends who want to see it, they can. My first short film is not available online. But then my feature, Spa Night, is on Netflix right now. It's also on iTunes, Amazon. You could buy the DVD if you want to see the DVD extras, which includes an alternate ending for, I think Glenn left, but for the man who didn't like my ending. And then there's also a scene that I cut out of the film where I make my acting debut that we put in the DVD extras, but you'll see why I cut it, because I'm terrible. But yeah, thank you so much for coming. Yeah.